Chapter 17. Sean crawled down the drainage ditch towards the bank of the river. A shell burst on the edge of the ditch and scattered clods of earth over his back. He paused to brush a tangle of grass roots out of his whiskers, and then crawled on to where Colonel Aitchison squatted on his haunches in earnest conversation with the captain of the Fusiliers.
Hey, Colonel Aitchison, I doubt you'll be needing me again, will you?
The captain looked shocked at Sean's term of address, but Aitchison grinned briefly.
A runner just got through. We've been ordered to withdraw.
What a pity, Sean grunted sarcastically.
Just when we were knocking the daylights out of old Brother Boar.
And all three of them ducked as a machine gun hammered lumps of dirt out of the bank above their heads. Then Sean took up from where he had been interrupted.
Well, in that case, I'll be leaving you.
Where are you going? The captain demanded suspiciously.
Not across that bridge.
Sean removed the stub of his cheroot from his mouth and pointed with it at the grey structure with its gruesome streaks of new paint.
I've got a wounded man with me. He'll never make it. Have you got a match?
Automatically, the captain produced a box of wax matches from his breast pocket.
Thanks. I'm going to swim him downstream, find a better place to cross.
Sean relit his cheroot, blew a cloud of smoke, and returned the captain's matches.
Pleasure meeting you, Colonel Aitchison.
You have permission to fall out, Courtney. A second longer they looked into each other's eyes, and Sean experienced a powerful desire to shake this man's hand, but instead he started crawling back along the ditch.
Courtney?
Sean paused and glanced over his shoulder.
What's the name of the other guide?
Friedman.
Saul Friedman.
Aitchison scribbled briefly in his notebook, then returned it to his pocket.
You'll hear more about today. Good luck.
And to you, sir.
From a tree that hung out over the brown water of the Tugela, Sean hacked a bushy green branch with his bayonet.
Come on.
And Saul slid down the greasy clay of the bank, waist-deep into the river beside Sean.
Leave your rifle.
Obediently, Saul dropped it into the river.
What's the bush for?
To cover our heads.
Why are we waiting?
For Aitchison to create a diversion when he tries to get back across the bridge. At that moment, a whistle shrilled on the bank above them. Immediately a fierce covering fire blared out, and a party of khaki-clad figures stampeded out onto the bridge.
Now, grunted Sean.
They sank together into the blood-warm water, with only their heads wreathed in leaves above the surface. Sean pushed out gently, and the current caught them. Neither of them looked back at the shrieking carnage on the bridge as they drifted away. 20 minutes later, and half a mile downstream, Sean edged across the current towards the remains of the railway bridge that hung like a broken drawbridge into the water. It offered a perfect access to the south, and the embankment of the railway would cover them in their retreat across the plain. Sean's feet touched mud bottom, and they were under the sagging bridge like chickens under the wing of a hen. He let the branch float away and dragged Saul to the bank between the metal girders.
5 minutes' rest, he told him,
and squatted beside him to rewind the bandage that had come down over Saul's ears. Muddy water streamed from sodden uniforms, and Sean mourned the cheroots in his tunic pocket. There was another drainage ditch running beside the high gravel embankment of the railway. Along it, walking in a crouch, Sean prodded Saul ahead of him, yelling at him every time he attempted to straighten up and relieve his aching back. Once, a sniper on the coppies behind them thumped a bullet into the gravel near Sean's head, and Sean swore wearily and almost touched his knees with his nose. But Saul did not notice it. With his legs sloppy under him, he staggered along in front of Sean, until finally he fell and lay in a sprawling, untidy heap in the bottom of the ditch. Sean kicked him.
Get up, damn you!
No, Ruth, don't wake me up yet. It's Sunday. I don't have to work today.
Speaking quite clearly in a reasonable, persuasive tone, Saul looked up at Sean, but his eyes were matte and the pupils shrunken to black points.
Get up, get up!
The use of Ruth's name inflamed Sean. He caught Saul's shoulder and shook him. Saul's head jerked crazily, and fresh blood seeped through his bandage. Instantly contrite, Sean laid him back gently.
Saul, please. You must, just a little further.
Glossless, whispered Saul. There's no gloss on it.
I don't want it. And he closed his eyes. His lips bulged open, and his breath snored through them in tiny bubbles of spittle. A suffocating despair drooped over Sean as he studied Saul's face. The eyes had receded into dark plum-coloured cavities, leaving the skin stretched tight across his cheeks and across the gaunt bony nose. Not because I nearly killed him. Not because I owe it to him. But because? How can you define your feelings for another man? All you can say is, because he is my friend. Then, because he is my friend, I cannot leave him here. Sinking down beside him, Sean lifted his slack body into a sitting position, draped one of Saul's arms around his shoulder, and stood up. Saul hung beside him, his head lolled forward on his chest, and Sean looked ahead. He could see the survivors from the bridge struggling back through the village, dragging their wounded with them. Across the whole breadth of the plain, singly and in twos and threes, harried by shrapnel, beaten, broken, Buller's mighty army was in retreat. And there, not 100 yards from where Sean crouched in the railway ditch, drawn up neatly in the grass, deserted, forlorn, stood the field guns. Quickly Sean averted his eyes from them and began plodding away from the river. Over his shoulder he held Saul's wrist. His free arm was wrapped around Saul's waist. Then slowly he was aware that the Boer fire was crescendoing once more. Shell that had fallen haphazard among the retreating men began to concentrate on the area directly ahead of Sean. Behind him, the rifle fire that had popped spasmodically on the heights now swelled into a fierce, sustained crackle, like a bushfire in green forest. Leaning against the side of the ditch, Sean peered ahead through the mimosa trees and the storm of dust and bursting shell. He saw horses, 2 teams in harness, men with them racing in through the thorn trees, lifting pale dust in a cloud to mingle with the dust of the shells. Far ahead of them, brandishing his cane, leading them in towards the abandoned guns, galloped a figure on a big shiny bay. He's laughing. In wonder, Sean watched the leading rider disappear behind a column of dust and high explosive, only to emerge again as he swerved his mount like a polo player. His mouth was open, and Sean saw the glint of white teeth. The fool is laughing his head off. And suddenly Sean was cheering wildly. Ride, man! Ride! He shouted, and his voice was lost in the shriek and crash of the bombardment. They've come to fetch the guns! Howled Sean. Saul, they've come for the guns! Without knowing how he had done it, mad with the excitement of it, Sean found himself out of the ditch, running with new strength, running with Saul's unconscious weight slung over his shoulder, running through the grass towards the guns. By the time he reached the battery, the first team was already there. The men were down, struggling to back the horses up to the trail of the number one gun. Sean slid the inert body from his shoulder and dropped it in the grass. 2 of them were trying to lift the trail of the field gun, but this task required 4 men. "Get out of the way!" Sean shouted them, and straddled the long wedge-shaped trail of steel. He locked his hand into the grips and heaved upwards, lifting it clear and high. "Get the carriage!" Quickly they rolled the detachable axle and wheels in under the trail and locked them into position. Sean stepped back, panting. "Well done!" The young officer leaned forward in his saddle as he shouted at Sean, "Get up on the carriage!" But Sean turned and ran to Saul. He picked him up and stumbled with him to the carriage. "Grab him," he grunted to the 2 soldiers, who were already aboard. Between them they dragged Saul up onto the carriage seat. "No room for you, cock. Why don't you take Taffy's place on the right-hand wheeler?" one of them shouted down, and Sean saw he was correct. The drivers were mounting up, but 1 saddle was empty. "Look after him," he told the man who held Saul. "Don't worry, I've got him," the gunner assured him, and then urgently, "You'd best grab a seat, we're pulling out." "Look after him," Sean repeated and started forward. In that moment the luck which had protected him all morning ran out. A shell burst beside him. He felt no pain, but his right leg gave under him, and he went down on his knees. He tried to stand, but his body would not obey. "Forward," shouted the subaltern, and the gun carriage trundled away, gathering speed, beginning to jolt and bounce
as the drivers lashed the horses. Sean saw the gunner who held Saul staring back at him from the carriage. His face was contorted with helplessness.
"Look after him!" Sean shouted. "Promise me you'll look after him!"
The gunner opened his mouth to reply, but another shell burst between them, throwing up a curtain of dust that hid the carriage. This time Sean felt the shrapnel tear into his flesh. It stung like the cut of a razor, and he sagged sideways. As he went down, he saw that the subaltern had been hit as well, saw him thrown up his arms and fall backwards over the rump of his horse, rolling from the saddle, hitting the ground with his shoulder, one foot caught in the stirrup, so that he dragged over the rough ground until the stirrup leather snapped and left him lying. His horse galloped away in pursuit of the careering gun carriage. Sean dragged himself after it.
"Look after him!" he shouted. "For God's sake, look after Saul!"
But nobody heard that shout, for they were gone away amongst the trees, gone away in the dust with the shellfire escorting them like a troop of brown demons. Still Sean crawled after them, using one hand to reach ahead and claw into the earth and inch his whole body belly down through the grass. His other arm dragged at his side, and he could feel his right leg slithering after him until it caught and tethered him. He struggled against it, but his toe had hooked in a tuft of coarse grass, and he could not free it. He wriggled onto his side and doubled up with his broken arm beneath him to look back at his leg. There was much blood, a wet, slippery drag mark of it across the flattened grass, and still it welled up out of his body. But there was no pain, only a dizziness and a weariness in his head. His leg twisted at a ridiculous angle from his trunk, and the spur on his boot stood up jauntily. He wanted to laugh at the leg, but somehow the effort was too great, and he closed his eyes against the glare of the sun. Near him he heard somebody groaning, and for a while he thought it must be Saul. Then he remembered that Saul was safe, and that it was the young subaltern. With his eyes closed, Sean lay and listened to him die. It was an ugly sound.